Chicago Sports Conversation is now.
Rizzo slaps one toward left field. That's going to be a base hit. It gets down. It's going to roll to the wall. Rizzo easing his way into second. He's got a double. It is 3-0 Cubs.
That was a really good game. Strasburg was outstanding, and you had to pitch as well as Kyle pitched in order to beat him.
The beat.
It has happened. Mitch Trubisky is the starting quarterback.
I think it was time, and I think he's ready.
On 720 WGN.
Just the way we drew it up, baby. One game into the playoffs, one game in the books. Magic number, championship number, 10. Leon Durham. I know you don't like me mentioning Leon Durham, Harry Tynowitz, but it's give me another 10. How about Ron Santo?
How about Ron Santo? We can only think of another 10. Ron Santo, what a great game last night for the Cubs, and I'm so glad that they went with the professor, Kyle Hendricks. He was beautiful. Strasburg looked fantastic, but, you know, Hendricks was better. And we know what good teams do, Carm. They take advantage of the smallest of miscues, and the Cubbies did it last night.
A little ground ball to third. Error. There you go. Javi Baez is on, and then coming around to score on a base hit by Chris Bryant. The Cubs on the board. And then great base running by Bryant, reading the throw.
We talked about it. The guy is an outstanding hitter. He's a slugger, and he's a terrific third baseman. He showed that when he picked up that ball barehanded. But he is a wonderful, wonderful base runner.
Yep, got in scoring position. Then Rizzo comes through, and the Cubs are up one game to none. I can't stop smiling about it. Let's set up the old show here. It is the beat. We are with you till 7. We are going to be on opposite Cubs. We know that will be a challenge.
Since there's no place to hear the Cubs game on the radio today, we figure you just stay right here and we'll give you updates on the score.
Exactly. And anytime anything happens, of course, we will update you and we will have a ton of Bears talk for you. Sam Smith will join us as we'll preview the NBA season, which is right around the corner. And some very interesting comments earlier in the week from Pat Fitzgerald about how Northwestern handled any national anthem protest at Ryan Field, what he's talking about with his players, what his job is as a coach on a college campus. Some really interesting stuff there. Kevin Powell's going to join us in 10 minutes from D.C. as we preview Cubs and Nationals. Game 2, Harry, you know, this is the thing. When you win game 1, the second game on the road is gravy. Now you want to win it because it's a 5-game series, but you don't have to be on edge, bizarre, nervous because you've got one already, and so it's like you can just watch this game and if they win, well, okay, now I'm talking sweep, and if not, we're coming home 1-1.
And even if you're a casual baseball fan, I think by now you read about the Nationals' problems in the playoffs. They've never gotten out of the first round. They've never won a playoff series since they became the Washington Nationals.
Well, and I don't necessarily care about that because I feel like those things eventually take care of themselves, but maybe it matters.
Hey, it's in their heads. It's in their heads. It's in their heads. The fans are thinking about it. The players are thinking about it.
You really think a professional athlete, Major League Baseball player who's been strong enough mentally to get to that level in times goes into these, oh man, we've never gotten through this.
Dude, they've been blaming the Teddy Roosevelt mascot who runs in the president race. You think that my, you know, angst towards Bartman is bad? How about they blame the Teddy Roosevelt mascot for the reason that they didn't win the last playoff series or two playoff series ago?
Okay, well, I mean, maybe it's a thing. I find it hard to believe, but I suppose it's possible. Cubs lineup tonight?
Yeah, let's have it.
Albert Almora will lead off and play center field, followed by Chris Bryant at third, Rizzo at first, Contreras catching, Addison Russell at short, batting fifth, Ben Zobrist dropped from 1 to 6, and he'll play right field as Jason Hayward will not go against the lefty Gio Gonzalez.
Good idea if Schwarber's not in the lineup either, I bet.
Way to go. Javi Baez slides up to 7 from 8, and Ian Happ in the lineup, batting 8th, playing left field, switch hitter.
Great.
With John Lester on the mound. I love the lineup. We did a True Blue last night, myself, Andy Mazur, Justin Kaufman. Of course, Harry, you're going to be here tonight. 11 o'clock after Blackhawks hockey, the Columbus Blue Jackets at the United Center tonight will be with our special Cubs post. But I got the outfield right. I'm pumping out the chest on that, Harry.
Yeah,
I feel good about it.
I'm surprised John Jay didn't make it into the starting outfield last night.
And that's who Andy had.
Hayward only had 12 starts in center, and he started. But you know, the great Paul Sullivan, best baseball writer in the country, got a little feisty with me a couple weeks ago when I said I still have some Dusty Baker angst. And I thought Dusty made a couple of big mistakes last night.
Huge.
And right now where we're at is we have two wonderful teams, but one of them has Joe Maddon and one of them has Dusty Baker.
So for me, it was in the seventh inning, and the Nationals have a runner on second. It's the top of the seventh. The Cubs have a runner on second in, who was on second base at that point? Doesn't matter. Javi Baez was at the plate. Two outs. Seventh inning. Kyle Hendricks is on deck. John Jay is in the on-deck circle.
Right, he's going to bat for Kyle Hendricks.
It appears that he's going to bat for Kyle Hendricks. I would have made John Jay take that at bat if I was Dusty Baker. You walk Javi, first base was open, and you force the Cubs to make a move with Hendricks, who was dominant all night. You get into the bullpen. I'd rather face Pedro Strop if I'm Dusty Baker in the Nationals than Kyle Hendricks for another inning. Instead, they pitch to Baez. Baez strikes out. And then John Jay comes back into the dugout. Bottom of the seventh, there goes Kyle Hendricks. And now we only need one inning of Carl Edwards and one inning of Wade Davis. So Strop is fresher for game two. He didn't have to go through the heart of the lineup in game one. I thought that was a huge mistake by Dusty.
I would agree. The very good thing to point out, because the two things I was going to mention weren't going to be either of those. But yeah, and the announcers are like, well, you know, Hendricks doesn't pitch real deep in any games this year. Like, well, okay, it's awesome that he's coming back out for the seventh. I thought Dusty made two mistakes. The lesser one was pinch hitting Howie Kendrick. The Cubs have a righty on the mound, and he puts Howie Kendrick up there instead of Adam Lind. Adam Lind is a much, much better hitter. Adam Lind has twice the homers that Howie Kendrick does. There's a guy on base, so at this point, Adam Lind is the tying run, and he sends Howie Kendrick up there, righty on righty, instead of the better hitter, Adam Lind. And I thought the major mistake that Dusty made, two outs, a right-hander, Wilson Contreras, on deck, and he has his right-handed pitcher, Ryan Madsen, face Anthony Rizzo instead of walking him. Are you kidding me? And Rizzo, of course, knocks in the third run.
Very bizarre. Very bizarre. And they asked Rizzo about it after the game, and he's like, well, I'll tell you the truth. And then he proceeded to lie. You don't want to put guys on in the playoffs, da-da-da-da-da-da. The actual reality is you never want to let the other team's best player beat you, especially in the playoffs. And Anthony Rizzo has been the Cubs' best player, or whatever. You want to put him 1A, 1B with KB. It doesn't matter. But it was ridiculous. Come on, man.
Yeah, and not just us. Everybody talks about it. Javi Baez is spectacular at second. Now, I'm very glad Ian Happ is playing tonight. I would be very happy if it's not a slam against Adam Russell. It's just love for Hap. If they move Baez to short for a couple games and put Addison Russell in the dugout and started Ian Hap at second, I'd be okay with that. But Hap starts tonight and left. By far, your best defensive infield is Russell and Baez out there together. But Javi Baez made a play last night going back to right center and catching a pop-up. He made it look easy. It's one of the hardest plays for a second baseman to make. And Rendon, who's one of their best hitters in Washington, blew a ball that opened up the floodgates for the Cubs.
He sure did. And credit to the Cubs for getting it done.
Pouncing on that opportunity.
Kyle Hendricks got the bunt down, executed that. And then Zobrist did not have a great night last night, but that's okay because Chris Bryant can go to right field with two strikes. Yeah. Underrated that these hits were coming with two strikes.
Benzo, what his signature appearance at the plate is he usually is the Cub that sees the most pitches. And his first couple times up last night, he was first ball hitting.
Yeah, well, I think that was obviously Steven Strasburg related as they were trying to jump on him. And I thought actually Zobrist, the pitches that he swung at were good pitches to hit relative to what you're going to see in the playoffs from a pitcher of that caliber, and he just missed him.
And Wade Davis looked great. And again, I really believe there's a psychological part of sports. And the way that Wade Davis ate up that batting order in the ninth inning, I believe that if he goes out there again tonight, the Nationals will be like, oh, here we go again.
Well, Wade Davis's postseason numbers are just ridiculous.
Oh, yeah?
And he's pitched in huge games in Kansas City for multiple seasons.
Did I ever tell you used to work in Kansas City?
I might have mentioned that once or twice. Kevin Powell never worked in Kansas City. Kansas City, but he does work for WGN, and he's in D.C. at Nationals Ballpark. So we're going to talk to him with our pregame show continuing in 2 minutes on 720 WGN.
Cubs, 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 here come the Cubs. Cubs, 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 here come the Cubs.
I am just so excited to see the Cubby Blue at Wrigley Monday afternoon, Tuesday late afternoon. That Monday game might actually get moved if we get some sweeps going from a little bit later, from 3 to 4:30. But regardless, afternoon baseball, heading into your evening, nothing better, Harry Tynowitz. Kevin Powell, of course, will be there too.
And let's you know, I mean, as long as we're getting the Cubs here past the Nationals, let's be really selfish. A way to see them both, the Cubs and Mitchell Trubisky's first start with the Bears.
Yeah, exactly right. Kevin Powell out in D.C. getting ready for game two, where Jason Heyward will not start. KP, you love Jason Heyward. How did he take the news that, Ben Zobrist is in right today. We got a lefty on the mound. I'm sure he wasn't completely shocked.
No, he was completely fine with it. I think Jason Heyward knows that there's about a 99% chance he's still going to play. These players trust Joe Maddon. He knows how to keep these guys ready, even if they're not starting. And I think Jason Heyward, as Joe Maddon referred to him today, is a professional, and that's all we've seen from Heyward over the past couple of years. So he was fine with it. I love this lineup for the Cubs tonight. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but throw every single right-handed bat you got at Gio and see what sticks. But no, he was fine with it. And I think that's something, you know, it's a credit obviously to the players that they're so versatile that Maddon can rotate these guys around. But, you know, give Maddon credit. He keeps these guys ready at all times. And I think he does give everybody a good amount of playing time so they don't feel lost in the dugout. I think it was Ben Zobrist who said, it feels like you're never rotting when you're on this team because Maddon keeps you on your toes. So I don't think Heyward took it just fine. He's going to get in tonight at some point. There's no question Madden's going to put him in later in the game for a defensive substitution at least.
Yeah, KP, I'm with you all the way. I love Elmora in center, and I think that's the best thing about playing for Joe Maddon is you come to the park every day knowing that you're probably going to get in the game no matter who you are on that roster. It's so wonderful that we don't have to face, Max Scherzer for the first two games. In Gio Gonzalez, the Nationals have a very, very good left-handed pitcher, but he gave up the second most amount of walks, and he's particularly awful in the first inning. So how do you tell your offense to take advantage, pounce on him in the first inning, but also be patient at the plate? How do you do that?
Well, they're going to be patient, but keep in mind the Cubs drew the second most amount of walks in the National League right behind the Dodgers. So they are extremely patient. They know how to get on base. Look, the thing with this Cubs lineup, and we saw it last night, is the more times they see starting pitcher, the more dangerous it becomes. We saw it last night, and particularly the heart of the lineup with Bryant and Rizzo. So I think they're definitely going to be patient to start the game, and then, you know, probably see him pounce the third time around a little bit. So I could see them both sort of the lineup kind of taking a step back the first couple times around and let Gio throw strikes because, yeah, you're right. And his last two outings in the regular season, last few outings really weren't all that good. So, yes, he does walk a lot of guys. His Cubs lineup is very patient, but it's very potent when it needs to be, and it doesn't need to be necessarily right off the bat. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see the Cubs taking a lot of pitches to start the game.
How much heat is Dusty getting from the local media on his decisions last night, mainly pitching to Rizzo?
Quite a bit. And we asked Rizzo about it last night, and he was like, I mean, I guess he wasn't really defending Dusty, but he was just like, it's different in the postseason. That's all Rizzo was saying. He's like, it's just different.
Yeah, he lied.
Did you hear what Rizzo had to say he was like, oh, it's just different in the postseason and things like that. So maybe it is, but yeah, it was bad managing by Dusty last night. There's no question.
KP, I'm so used to watching Cubs road games at this point, and half the crowd is wearing blue, but there were a lot of National fans last night. How much blue in the stands this evening, sir?
I would say more today than yesterday, and a gentleman in a Kyle Schwarber jersey right now is standing next to me eating a hot dog and drinking a Budweiser.
You just paint a picture in my mind's eye, Kevin.
And actually, correction, is a Bud Light, not a Budweiser. My bad. Only facts here, no fake news on these reports. It seems like there's more today, Harry, than there was yesterday. So the Cub fans obviously travel well And, yeah, I've seen a bunch, talked to a few today. Some are coming from all over the place, not just from Chicago, because, as we all know, Cub fans are everywhere.
Weather? What's the weather like out there?
Perfect. Well, actually, it's kind of breezy, to be honest. It's picking up. Wind's blowing out to left center right now, and the national anthem's starting, guys, so I got to leave. I love you, and I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, Kevin.
You're awesome, KP.
Thanks, Kevin Powell. Kevin Powell out in D.C. as the Cubs getting ready to go, of course, about 10 minutes from now. Anytime anything happens scoring-wise, we, of course, will update you right here. Ton to do on the show as well. Rough day for Northwestern and a huge upset in college football. Huge upset down in Norman, Oklahoma today. The Iowa State Cyclones. So we'll do some football talk coming up after the 4:30 news on 720 WGN.
Blair Walsh from 27 yards left hash. Snap good, spot down. Walsh's kick is up, and it is no good. He missed it. Are you kidding me? The season can't end like that. He missed it left, and the Seattle Seahawks are off to Charlotte. Blair Walsh missed a 27-yard field goal. And the Minnesota Vikings are going to lose 10-9.
I mean, I'm not a Vikings fan. Don't hate the Vikings, for the record. Never have. Always appreciated their fans and their play-by-play announcer. But that I felt that pain. That was terrible.
And that's the beauty of a Paul Allen, is not only is he a fabulous announcer and a very funny dude, but he is passionate. He lets you know what he's thinking.
The radio host of your Minnesota Vikings, who, of course, the Bears play on Monday night, Paul Allen joining us at PA on the mic on Twitter, K-Fan up in Minneapolis. Paul, thanks for taking time. How are you?
What's up, boys? Man, it's good. Ready to come to Chicago tomorrow, see that the temperatures are going to be okay. Looks like it'll be a fun Monday night at Soldier Field.
Not when Mitchell Trubisky comes out of the tunnel there, Paul Allen.
Hey, Paul.
Well, not fun for who? For Mitchell against Zimmer's defense or the Vikings because they never win in Illinois?
And isn't that a wonderful thing, by the way? Paul, always a pleasure to spend some time with you. We thank you for giving us a little of that on a Saturday afternoon. So, you know, they're saying up in Lake Forest they're preparing for two quarterbacks, but I suppose you would know, are we going to see number 8, Sam Bradford, under center?
Well, Sam was limited in practice this week, and I mean, Case got reps, but so did Sam. So, you know, I think the decision probably will be made somewhere later today or tomorrow, depending on how Sam came out of the Saturday practice today. Now, I can tell you one thing that's not going to happen is we'll not come up to the game, you know, like 3 hours before the game, like we did in Pittsburgh, not knowing who the quarterback was going to be. Because Case Keenum, he was ready because he practiced during the week, but it was just a very difficult situation. So they'll know tonight or maybe tomorrow.
You mentioned that Vikings defense, and it's super impressive. I watched basically the entire Lions game, and that super fast, physical, all of it. So I would assume that, what's the talk about facing a rookie quarterback this week, Paul? I mean, what is being said?
Well, with this Vikings defense, I mean, you're right. It is good. It is fast. And it needs to be more opportunistic. But, you know, there are some common threads developing right now that are getting alarming. I mean, the Vikings have outplayed the Lions badly two of the last three times and lost both games, you know. And with the Bears, man, back to 0-2 when the game was in Champaign, we're 2-14 in our last 16 in that state. And that includes some pretty good defensive performances. This Vikings defense is the best it has been since Mike Zimmer has been the head coach. You know, you have a bunch of high level players who now have been in this system 2, 3, and 4 years, and we're really, really seeing it game in and game out. They would have won that Lions game if they hadn't dropped 3 interceptions. They sacked Stafford 6 times. They put Stafford on his worst game since 2015. The defense played a winning football game, but, you know, funny, we lost again to the Lions.
Paul, let's see. We've had Ahmad Rashad and Sammy White, Anthony Carter and Hassan Jones, Chris Carter and Jake Reed, Chris Carter and Randy Moss, but the leading receiving duo in the NFL, as we visit with you here on the beat on WGN Radio, Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. How good are these two receivers?
Well, they're very good because of their route running ability. And I don't want to bore your audience on a Saturday afternoon and go hardcore football 101.
Right, that's our job.
They do with their, what they do with their routes, specifically at the tops of their routes. You know, I think if you got John Fox or Vic Fangio to open a vein about how these guys run routes, they would say the way they hide them at the top of their routes leads them to getting so open. With Thielen, you know, Adam was a practice squad guy who was a really good special teams guy, and he popped onto the scene last year. And this year, he's really, really good. It's amazing when I watch these games back, the lack of coverage Adam Thielen gets, and I can't exactly explain why. But, you know, with Sam Bradford at quarterback, if Sam can play Monday and make the majority of the games this year, this receiving duo is legit. I'm not going to say Moss Carter, but it's legit.
So, okay, let's play this out a little further. Sam Bradford comes back. He plays well. And then about 4 or 5 weeks from now, Teddy Bridgewater's healthy. I know I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but what does that look like in Minnesota right now? Because we're hearing word that Teddy is going to be healthy at some point this year.
Well, the way you framed it up, you said if Sam plays well, what happens when Teddy comes back? You know, then Teddy sits. If this situation with Sam's left knee lingers throughout the season and you got to sweat him with limited practices every single week, then I think Bridgewater will get a chance to play. And when he's set to come off the pup, I believe he will come off the pup, and I wouldn't be surprised if he went active. You know, now, I've watched Teddy rehab this knee basically for the last 6 or 7 months. And, you know, Bridgewater looks good with what he's doing, but he hasn't done any team drills in a year. So when he's eligible to come off the physically unable to perform list, yeah, I can't see if they need him playing that first week. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe, you know, I would think it would need at least 1 week of practice before playing him. But this team won a division with Teddy, and Teddy's a little underrated, you know, when people compare Teddy and Sam. I think they're both good, and I think the Vikings are in a good spot.
Voice of the Vikings, the most popular guy on KFAN, and the heartbeat of Minnesota sports is Paul Allen, hanging out with Mark Carmen and myself, Harry, on WGN's The Beat. Paul, you guys had what looked like the best rookie running back of the bunch, Dalvin Cook, and a horrible injury.
Ouch.
And now he is lost for the year. What do you think Lamont Murray can do for the Purple?
That completely sucks. I mean, because Dalvin, you know, he had a 100-yard game against New Orleans, and he scored his first touchdown in the most recent game, and he catches the ball, and his pass protection's really good. I mean, he was a complete guy, and he legitimately could have become Offensive Rookie of the Year. So now you move on to Latavius Murray. You've got Jerick McKinnon behind him. They just signed former Patriot Stephen Ridley. He practiced a little bit this week, but I don't think he'll play. Or if he's in uniform Monday night, I just can't see him playing much. But Murray, the potential problem here is they just, without Adrian Peterson, a north-south guy, they just constructed the entire running game, the entire offseason, for offensive linemen to move and get Dalvin out in space on the edges. And his three best runs, 33, 32, and 25, were all around the corner, with offensive linemen blocking in front of him. That's not Latavius Murray. Latavius is closer to Adrian than he is Dalvin Cook. So, you know, now the offensive line, which was one of the worst in the NFL last year, has been really good this year. It's really good because of its athleticism. Now it's going to have to shift to kind of a north-south deal, and I'm curious to see how it'll work Monday night.
I want to talk about the legacy of a former Minnesota Vikings running back before you go here, Paul Allen. What does Adrian Peterson, I guess, mean to Minnesota and Vikings fans after sort of all has been said and done here?
I think the majority of fans, they did not mind when he was not retained. And I think they recognize him statistically as the greatest running back in the history of the team. But I think the situation off the field with his child, in which he became embroiled in 2014, ruined his legacy for tens of thousands of fans. So, you know, he's an older running back, you know, where the pass protection and the catching was non-existent at times. And I think people, honestly, I think they were ready to move on. And I'm very fond of Adrian. You know, Adrian was great to my kids. He was great to some charities that I do. And I loved calling his games. But I can understand why it was time to move on.
Paul, whether or not the Minnesota Vikings end up in the Super Bowl will end up in Minnesota in that gorgeous new stadium of yours. What can you tell us about the stadium, and how upset are you that it's Justin Timberlake doing the halftime show and not Hall and Oates?
Yeah, right. I don't know if Daryl Hall and John Oates would appeal to the masses in their 60s or 70s the way they would have maybe in the 80s when they ruled MTV. I'm not mad at the Timberlake decision. I mean, I'm not a huge Justin Timberlake guy.
You'd prefer Hall and Oates.
Guys that, you know, he's one of the most talented and gifted performers in the last 20 years of performing. The planning here is unbelievable. I mean, there's something every single day. And, you know, a lot of parties and a lot of galas and stuff are starting to pop up now. So Minneapolis will be ready for the Super Bowl, and it will be a joyous occasion.
Hey, before you go, Paul, why do the Bears have the Vikings number in your mind, at least in the state of Illinois?
Man, that's just like the craziest thing in the world, and I can't answer it. I mean, we're unbelievably good in 2009, and Devin Aromashudu beats us in overtime.
Well, remember that?
In 2002, the heat index is 110. Mike Tyson's first game goes to overtime, and we lose. You know, it's just, I can't explain it. The Bears, I got a lot of respect for the Bears fan base. It's a very smart fan base. It's a very tough place to play.
Bears.
But I've seen some situations emerge there. I think was the quarterback's name Craig or Chad Hutchinson, one of the two in 03. You know, we lose to him. We lost to Kyle Orton in his rookie year. Jordan Howard goes for $163 last year, you know, and makes legitimately good all-pro type players look silly with bad angles and missed tackles. They have to get that out of their minds by the time we fly there tomorrow, because I've heard it a lot around the facility with the veterans and with the younger guys, and they just can't spook themselves before they get there, or they'll lose again.
When I woke up this morning, I did not think I would hear the name Devin Aromashudu. Thank you for that.
That was huge.
I want to say 19. Paul, before we let you go, you are, as I said, star of KFAN. You are all things sports in Minneapolis. Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, and our former coach, Tom Thibodeau. What are you guys expecting from the Minnesota Timber Bulls this year?
Man, I wanted them to trade for Jimmy Butler last offseason, but now they got it done. I think Bulls fans will like Zach LaVine. He's unbelievably explosive offensively, very explosive. I mean, he'll be full throttle, and he'll pull up from 25 and nail a three, and he'll dunk on you in the key, too. I'm a major, major Jimmy Butler fan, and I have been for many years. I love the NBA. I love his two-way game, and I love his bulldog nature. I love, you know, how Jimmy wants the ball at the end of the game. He gets to the foul line. He can get to the basket. And he's just a tough, hard-nosed player. And Karl Anthony Towns is really, really good. And Andrew Wiggins is really, really offensively good. But the Timberwolves need a bulldog like Butler. So this not only should lead them to the playoffs, it should lead them to a top-five seed in the Western Conference.
Just mark it down here, Paul Allen. Andrew Wiggins and Jimmy Butler, that ain't going to work. And I like Jimmy to a point. Because Jimmy is all about Jimmy.
Jimmy passes. Jimmy will average 5 assists a game for this team.
Jimmy loves Jimmy. Jimmy is going to want to be the star of the show.
Jimmy likes Elaine.
Jimmy Butler is better than Andrew Wiggins.
Not even close.
What you're saying right now, if it's not meshing, it's Andrew's problem, not Jimmy's.
Yeah, but Andrew long term has got more talent than Jimmy. We could have this conversation for hours.
I don't know about that, man. I mean, I've watched Andrew all of his career, and you know, and you guys know more about Jimmy than me. But I mean, I followed him closely from afar. Jimmy impacts the game and the box score more than Wiggins ever has. Yeah. I mean, Jimmy will give you 5 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals. He'll get to the line 9 times. Unlike Andrew, he'll make them. And Andrew can score 35 or 40, ain't no doubt about that, and he's more explosive than Jimmy. But when it comes to two-way players and complete players, with all due respect, I don't think Wiggins is in Butler's class.
Not yet.
Hey,
that's true.
As a Jayhawk, I can tell you that Wiggins did not show up for the tournament, his final game. Just lackluster, no attitude, no preparation.
A lot of minutes on those Jimmy Butler legs, too.
That's true. And you know, in the first preseason game this year against the Lakers, of the big three they have, Butler, Towns, and Wiggins, your guy Thibodeau played Jimmy the entire first quarter after sitting the other guys.
Of course he did.
I can see how this is going to work out. Jimmy's going to play a ton. Jimmy's going to be good. I hope Jimmy doesn't break down.
Paul Allen.
You're awesome, Paul.
voice of the Vikings. Thanks so much, Paul. We appreciate it.
Yep. See y'all later. Bye-bye.
Paul Allen up in Minnesota. I didn't know we were going to get some hoop in there.
Oh, I knew it all along. I knew that would get you going.
Oh, did it get
would
going?
Bring that would bring a smile to your face. Well, I mean, he's a big wild guy too. You could talk anything Minnesota. We could ask him about a PJ Fleck.
We could ask him about a little PJ Fleck. And what do they do today? They're playing right now. The old I'll check the Golden Gophers. In fact, we'll give you a little college football update coming on back here. 720 WGN. Little tribute to Tom Petty this afternoon. Now, why would I ask Dan Long to play "Learning to Fly," Harry? How good are you? How well do you know me?
You're asking him that because you lost your virginity to the Tom Petty song "Learning to Fly."
That is not the reason. Although, when "Learning to Fly" came out, that would be around that time period. That's true. So that's not a bad guess.
Did it come out like 5 years ago?
About 3 years ago, yes. It came out. I'm 44. Do you have a guess? Guess two.
You love the video.
Let me tell you. See, the year.
Bulls, because of the Bulls. Come on. What am I, a rookie? Because of the Bulls, because of Michael Jordan. That's why.
Because it was the theme song of the Chicago Bulls' first ever championship video.
91.
Right. Learning to Fly.
That's exactly why.
Now, not my favorite Tom Petty song.
No, there's so many great
ones. There's a gazillion others, but I do enjoy Learning to Fly, and so this is a sports show. I thought that would be a nice, you know.
And it was. I love the way you set that up, and what a horrible loss about Tom Petty. We'll discuss a little more about him later. If I could read one, yes, sir?
Nope, go ahead, read a text.
This text comes to us from Wally. Wally says, Mark and Harry, I'm listening to you while I am in Shanghai. Thank you for being my lifeline to Chicago sports while I'm here for a few weeks, Wally.
Wally, I had a great time in Shanghai when I was there for the Laureus Sports Awards about a year and a half ago. And I recommend walking down some of the side streets there and exploring what could possibly happen.
Hey, yeah, learning to fly.
Learning to fly. So, at any rate, let's take a little look at the old Big Ten schedule, what's going on today. As you heard on WGN, Northwestern's offense never really showed up at Ryan Field. Give credit to Penn State, the fourth team in the country. 31-7, the Nittany Lions improved to 6-0. They get a bye, and then they're going to play Michigan. And the Cats are gearing up to go on the road to Maryland next week without Patty Fisher, their rookie sensational linebacker who was kicked out of the game for targeting. So that hurts.
42.
That hurts today, and it hurts even more next week. Maryland, by the way, is getting smoked right now by Ohio State, 34-7. Terps lost last year to the Buckeyes, 62-3, and they were 30-point underdogs today here.
After having won last week at Minnesota.
Yep. Minnesota is leading Purdue 14-13 with 5:03 to go in the third quarter. Minnesota has the football if you really want to dive into that one. Indiana on top of Charleston Southern, 24-0 in Bloomington. And then earlier today, one final, my Iowa Hawkeyes finally got themselves a Big Ten win after a devastating loss to Penn State, and then a poor showing against Michigan State. The Hawkeyes bombed out Illinois, who was competitive in the first half, but 45-16.
I got to tell you, everybody I know that went to Iowa, everybody I know that was a Hawkeye or a Hawkeye fan from that area, they're all really cool. They're all great, and there has never been anything greater than the first quarter wave to the Children's Hospital.
How cool is that?
I watched it today, and, you know, I'm rugged. I'm about as manly as they come, right? I'm about as macho as they come. Oh, man, I dropped a little of my cookie. I'm about as rugged as they come, and
you're tough.
I'm tearing up. There's this great children's hospital that sits on a hill on top of Kinnick Stadium, and after the first quarter, all the fans wave to these kids and their families, and so do the players, and so do the refs, and the visitors. Lovie Smith and Illinois were waving to these guys today. It's just this awesome tradition that has started there. And I just, you know, high five, you know, pat on the fanny. Way to go, Hawkeye Nation.
So many great things about the University of Iowa. Back in the day, they had a drugstore called Pearson's. You could go in the back, get the milkshake in the canister with the tuna salad, the egg salad.
Would they give you, like, the extra?
They'd give you the extra, baby. Of course, that is no longer in existence, unfortunately. But Georgia still is great cheeseburger. And it's always had a phenomenal hospital there. The University of Iowa hospitals are just top first class, baby. So outside of, you know, the field house tour, you go
did,
and you hoop.
Yes, did stand up there.
Did you really?
Yeah, there's a Holiday Inn.
There's a Holiday Inn.
Yeah, they had a, you know.
Sure. Holiday Inn right downtown. You could have done. Where'd you do stand up there?
One of the Holiday Inns.
Oh, okay.
I can tell you Derek Coleman was on Syracuse when I was doing stand up there.
Maybe at the mill. You could have been at the mill, Harry. I'm feeling it. Good pizza at the mill. All right. News is coming up. And then after 5 o'clock, Pat Fitzgerald had some really interesting things to say this week about how his players are approaching the national anthem, standing, kneeling, and the message they want to get out and what his job is as a college football coach, winning games versus also developing men. So we're going to play that coming back here after the news, 720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
5:09, hope you're having a great Saturday. I'm Mark Carmen, he's Harry Tynowitz with you till 7, as always, except next week, of course, Northwestern will be playing Maryland.
Oh, man.
2:30, so we'll probably be on somewhere around 6 o'clock for an hour or so, hopefully talking about some good Cubs news at that point, we'll see. And they're actually going to the third, 1-1, Cubs and the Nationals in Game 2. Now, tragedy in Las Vegas is just the worst, and I hate to say it from my own, you know, I think we all feel like this, it's just, at this point, not really surprised when these things happen, because they've happened so often. And how it relates to sports is, you know, Northwestern had their homecoming today, and there was a lot of discussion around the team as to how they were going to handle the national anthem, whether they wanted to do anything to show support for Vegas, you know, and also, I suppose, what's going on with NFL players and standing up or kneeling for inequality. And I don't want to have the whole discussion on whether I don't want to go down that road. But here was Pat Fitzgerald talking about how he handled it with his kids, his student athletes, and what he was going to allow, what he wasn't going to allow, and his role in the whole Northwestern decision, which Northwestern, they all were out in the field today, stood. I was paying close attention to the sidelines. There was one person, Harry, who I'm not sure what her role was, but she took a knee. That was it. Penn State was in the locker room. I'm not sure why that was going on. But Northwestern, they all stood. So anyway, here was Fitz earlier in the week.
If guys are going to execute their freedom of speech, then that's a choice that I'll fully support. I mean, that's a choice that we all have been given and a privilege that we've all been given. You know, to me, though, and, you know, I've already expressed this to our squad, so this is nothing new. You know, I've done a ton of research, and you guys can read what I said last week, you know, to Teddy. I mean, when you look at the peaceful protests that guys have made, it is not at the national anthem. It is not at our military. It is not at the freedom that we've all been provided. And I say that, and then you got 40% of the country that takes it out of context. You know, and so that's the 40% that you can't control. And I've expressed that to our guys. I've helped try to help them understand that anytime you do something that has to do with something that we all believe in, I think every American does it, that I know believes in our country and are very thankful for the freedoms that we're provided. That you, anytime you step out to show a peaceful protest that has nothing to do, at least the way people have expressed to me, and it's taken that way, because it's attached to the anthem, because it's attached to our flag, even though that's not what's been said and why it's been done. So you have to understand that that's going to be the reaction, and you have to understand that what comes along with that. Do I believe in protecting our guys' freedom of speech? Absolutely, because that's what's been provided to us as a country. You know, and we've got a lot of guys in our team that have military families, that have guys that have first responders, that have law enforcement and firemen and things of that nature, not only brothers and sisters, but siblings and cousins and neighbors. And so I know that our guys fully support that from the discussions that I've had with them. My personal, outside of when I go to the Blackhawks games, I always stand and I salute the flag because that's what I believe in. I'm also entitled to that also, too, and that's my belief. So that's what's so great about our country is as long as we have dialogue and we respect each other and we work to come together, we can create solutions and solve problems in our country. But, you know, days like today, you know, football seemed pretty insignificant. You know, days like today are for injustice and things that are not fair to people in our country. That doesn't change. And if young men are trying to step up, like I said last week, I showed them the video at halftime and from Stills and Thomas, and those guys are trying to make a difference in our community, and they created a police ride-along program. We've had a police ride-along program here at Northwestern Football for 20-plus years. You know, we try to be part of our solution in our community. We do those types of things to be able to be active. Should we be more involved? Yeah, absolutely, me included. But that, I think that's on all of us as citizens. I think that's on all of us as Americans is find ways to come together, not to come apart. And some people don't want to talk about it, and that's fair, and I respect that too. You know, but they don't want to talk about it until they want to take, you know, social media, you know, blast at you, which, you know, I wear purple shorts. I get made fun of, you know, and I get told I shouldn't wear shorts. You know, those are things like I told the players, you know, that comes along with the territory of being 42 years old and a head football coach. When you're a student and you're a student athlete, you're given a lot. You're given a platform. You're given a lot. A lot is expected. And when you decide to get involved and engage, it should be commended. It takes courage to do that. And this is just one example of a lot of areas that I'm very proud of our guys that are courageous. So what they decide to do and things of that nature will be things that we'll talk about as the week goes along. But I know that our guys, no matter what choice they make, they fully support our country. I know that for sure.
So I thought that was the most measured, both seeing the entire side from all sides, if you will. And one of the reasons, quite frankly, that I just love Fitz. I mean, it's just that's what you want as the leader of your football team, I would think.
They have such an outstanding setup now with Fitz for football and Chris Collins for basketball. You know, when King Coulter was at Northwestern, the former quarterback slash receiver, and he was the first guy to say we should unionize the student athletes. There should be a union for the amount of time that we spend. There needs to be a union. What if we get hurt and we have to, you know, have all these medical bills for years and years to come? And Northwestern applauded them. They didn't want the players to get a union. They didn't want that at all. But they loved the fact that Kane Coulter and the other athletes that went with them, you know, stood up for what they believed in. And I didn't want to paraphrase, so I went and I found the quote. This is after they got shot down in their bid to start the union. Northwestern's quote, "We applaud our players for bringing national attention to these important issues, but we believe strongly that unionization and collective bargaining are not the appropriate methods to address the concerns raised by student athletes."
Yeah, and Jim Phillips, the outstanding athletic director at Northwestern, has been, you know, he's been on the show a million times, and he's always talked about, as far as that particular issue, you know, making things more fair for student athletes and how to go about that. And the Kane thing was, that was a tough time for Northwestern. I mean, publicly, I thought Northwestern handled it as best they could.
They couldn't have handled it better.
Yeah, but that was difficult. I think, particularly on that football team, there was a lot of divisiveness there. And they did the best they could at the time. Speaking of, you know, let's play one more Fitz quote. He was asked about the national anthem and or any form of protest becoming a potential distraction to his team and what that could do to them on the field.
Maybe I'm like one of those new age like coaches. I think we're in college. We're citizens before we're students. We're citizens before we're coaches. If we don't talk about those things, I started our team meeting today talking about the tragedy in Las Vegas. I mean, I don't care about distractions when it comes to race. I have been entrusted by parents to help their young men grow. That's my job. I hope like heck we win a lot of football games and championships. But my job, number one, is to help our guys grow and develop to be the best men they can be. Along with that is being a student, and along with that is being an athlete. But number one, when I'm long retired, I want my guys to be able to say that you gave me everything you had, coach, to be to help me be prepared for life, to be the best man I could be, the best husband and the best father. That's my goal. And like I said, I hope we win a lot of football games doing it.
So I thought that was just awesome. I don't care about distractions. Winning football games is not everything. And not that he doesn't want to win. I mean, if you watched him today, he broke his headset in the first quarter. But I thought, like, if I'm a parent and I'm listening to that, like, okay, I would like my son to go play for Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern. That's what I would be about. Not going to some school where I'm going to, you're going to get pushed through however they do it to keep your grades active and have, and give you zero life experience or a lot less of a life experience.
What is his coach? I'm trying to remember this quote. Character is how you act when no one's looking. When you're walking down an alley and you see an empty candy wrapper on the ground, do you throw it out? I mean, Fitz just, he's at a different level than a lot of coaches.
Then I get an A for picking up the Svedka vodka pint that was in the parking lot today. Next to my car, for the record.
Oh, did you remember leaving it there last night?
I didn't.
Dan Long, did you leave it there?
Is that your Svedka, Dan Long? Little pint in the old parking lot?
I was listening to something else. Oh. What happened?
It's okay. There was a Svedka parking lot, Svedka vodka in the parking lot.
No, I don't drink vodka.
Yeah, that's okay. Right.
What? What country are you from?
So, right.
USA, where they make bourbon.
Okay, Dan Long.
But Vladimir would not appreciate you saying that.
So, yeah, I think that's a great quote from Fitz. And he's also, like, in different, before the season when they have the Big Ten media days, Fitz has sat there and said, look, you have two lives. You've got your athletic life on one track, and you've got your regular life on the other. And at some point, those two are going to intersect. You don't get to play football forever. You know, Fitz was an outstanding All-American, Big Ten, linebacker, superstar. He played exactly, I think, zero downs in the NFL. It was with the Cowboys or whatever. So he lives that. Like, guys, you might be phenomenal here, but it doesn't mean you're going to make millions on the NFL level.
And then you think of the coaches who, you know, played for national championships, who won for decades, who turn out to be just, you know, awful people.
Right.
Who ignored what was happening in front of their very eyes. And, you know, you compare that to what Fitz is doing.
Right. And then, and a question for you, 312-981-7200. And let's be, I love some honesty here. Would you rather your college football team, college basketball team, whoever, is a little or more than a little shaky with the rules and you win and you're in the Final Four all the time, or you're going and playing on the biggest stage? Or would you rather be Northwestern, who is going to bowl games and is dreaming of a national championship, but the reality is they haven't been back to the Rose Bowl since 95.
Right, right. But they've also been, I mean, I grew up here.
They're way better than they ever were, of course.
Right. I mean, the last 20 years, like, you know, going, they didn't win a bowl game for a very long time. But they've done that recently. Who, the Ole Miss,
they won the
Pins, right?
They beat
Pitt, and before Pitt, they beat Ole Miss.
Mississippi State,
right?
In the Gator Bowl.
Oh, Mississippi State. Thank you. You know, I got to think that if you're sending your kids to Northwestern, you see the big picture. If you're sending your kids to Stanford, you know, to I hate to give Duke credit, but, you know, Duke, if you're sending your kids to certain schools, you're kind of saying, you know, hey, it's great if we win, but you know, I want my kid to be prepared for life. That's the most important thing. And I think, you know, Northwestern does a very good job of that.
Right. But, you know, you're not going to compete on the same level with Ohio State and Michigan consistently if you, at least in my mind.
Right, but 10 years from now, you're also not going to have your wins voided.
Right, exactly. So, any rate, all right. I thought that was great stuff from Fitz earlier this week, even though the Cats got pummeled today by Penn State.
And it's kind of ironic that, or coincidental, that Penn State was in town.
That is.
Because they had one of those coaches.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and that's on the worst end of the spectrum.
And Bobby Bowden's another guy who, no, Bobby Bowden didn't do anything like that, but Sebastian, you know, I love kickers. And Seabass is one of my all-time favorite kickers. Sebastian Janikowski should have been suspended at Florida State And Bobby Bowden literally said, hey, for star players, we have a different set of rules. And he did not suspend them.
I do, on some level, believe in the different rules for stars, but I believe it more on the professional level than in college.
Well,
Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan. He gets special treatment.
What happened when he punched Steve Kerr in the face at practice?
Steve Kerr should apologize for that. That's exactly right.
Keep your face out of Jordan's fist's way.
Well, I mean, what are you doing aggravating Jordan to the point that he needs to punch you in the face? Get out of here. Play ball. Celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today. Talk some NFL coming up right after the 5:30 news on 720 WGN. Exactly when. I think we got into Tom Petty like for a couple months here, Harry. I miss Tom Petty, man. I love Tom Petty. Didn't go to, it was the last show that I could have gone to, at least that was
at Wrigley.
At Wrigley, had dinner with my cousin.
Stupid cousin.
How could I have ever, I'll never forgive myself for that one, Harry. Hey, top 25 college football right now.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame's rolling. Beating Carolina 26-7 for you ND fans out there. Ohio State's crushing Maryland 41-7 in the third. Biggest upset of the day, Iowa State.
Shocker.
Goes into Norman, Oklahoma. Comes back, by the way. At halftime, the Sooners are up 24-13. You think it's over. They end up sending it to the fourth, all knotted up at 24, and then... the Cyclones pull it off, 38-31. Go Ames, Iowa. You ever been to Ames, Iowa?
I have not been to Ames. I've been all over Iowa, but I have not been to Ames, Iowa. I would like to go to a game there.
Saw U2 in Ames, Iowa back in the day. A fine, fine experience. And for the record, Anthony Rizzo just hit a two-run homer, and the Chicago Cubs have taken a 3-1 lead.
What happened in the conversation we had about let's not send listeners to the Cubs game?
Well, they don't have to go there. I'm just telling them what happened. We got it right here.
Don't go there.
There's no need to go
there. So that's it. That's it. Game is over. The Cubs win.
Right, 3-1. Bryant led off with a double, and then Rizzo just hit one into the seats and right. And news is next, 720 WGN. So Rizzo's home run is now in question because a fan in right field who clearly was beyond the wall, caught it, and it was a Cub fan in D.C. who is wearing all sorts of Cubs gear. That's amazing. It makes me think of Dusty and a gentleman by the name of Steve Bartman.
Why you got to bring that up?
I know.
It's a home run.
It was ruled a home run, but they
and now it's officially been declared a home run upon further review. And I think what Dusty's really upset about the most is that somebody woke him up.
Did you hear him last night?
Yeah, groggy.
He sounded so old. I was actually concerned for him. I love Dusty. I'm a Dusty fan, not necessarily as a manager, but as a person.
I'm a Davey Lopes fan.
I like Davey Lopes, too.
Who was the first base coach for the Nationals, and he was a Cub. He was a Dodger forever, part of the longest-running infield, and it'll never be touched. That's a record that will never be broken. We'll ask Andy Mazur about it tonight on True Blue from 11 to midnight. But those four guys played together for the Dodgers forever, and Davey Lopes came to the Cubs when he was like 41, had 42 stolen bases.
Bring back the Penguin.
Ah, waddle, waddle.
Loved him. All right, hey, 5:32, so let's get in the newsroom here. News sponsored by Waltz Food Centers. WGN 537. He's Harry Tynowitz. I'm Mark Carmen. Good to be with you this afternoon. Blackhawk hockey coming up on the old radio station tonight. Hawks hosting the Columbus Blue Jackets, which means the return of Artemi Panarin. I'm sure the Hawks, I would assume that they're going to do a nice montage for the bread man, you would think.
They always do. They're so good at that. Man, the Hawks are so good at that.
They are. They have done great things as far as tributes and whatnot. Brian Bickle signing the one-day contract this week. He was on the radio station. That was very cool.
One More Shift, which we've talked about before. I love One More Shift. Where a former Hawks player from days gone by gets on the ice in full uniform. This time it was Bickle, who just literally had to retire.
What did you just say to me, Joe Romano, about Panarin? He didn't win a cup?
Is that what you said? He didn't win a cup.
So you don't think they won't honor him?
No, not that they won't honor him, but maybe it won't be as long as a Michael Frolik.
That's true.
I was just thinking during that commercial break I should have taken a Michael Frolik.
I'm going to let that sit there and let everybody digest.
By the way.
Harry's Humor brought to you by Harry.
By the way.
At harrys.com.
BTW for you millennials. Do not look for Panarin in a 72 jersey tonight. Panarin's been 9 his whole life. But obviously he cannot wear 9 for the Blackhawks. So he picked two numbers that add up to 9.
Why can't he wear 9?
Oh, they retired it for some guy.
Who was that?
Some like one of the greatest goal scorers ever in the history of the league.
He's like known as the Golden Jet or something?
He is known as the Golden Jet, yeah. Brother of the Silver Jet.
Okay.
So Artemi Panarin, look for him wearing 9 tonight.
Have they retired Brandon Saad's jersey yet?
No, they will. 9 tonight, by the way, of a great Bob Seger album.
3 goals on the return for Brandon Saad.
Gotta love that. Gotta love that. And that line with Taves and Panic. Oh.
You were texting me the other night, Harry. By the way, congratulations to Chris Bowden, who will be doing the pregame show tonight at 7. And congrats,
Bowden, and Judd.
Congrats to Judd Surratt, now the radio play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins. So little shift here at the old GN.
Judd loves his original six hockey, doesn't he?
I read one of his quotes, which I thought was vintage Judd, that he didn't win the lottery, he won the Powerball to be able to, you know, get to be a play-by-play announcer for original six team, going to Boston, such a phenomenal city, and the whole thing. So Judd's worked incredibly hard and knows his hockey and did great work with the Wolves back in the day. It was phenomenal with the Hawks.
Great teammate, will do anything for anybody.
So are the Hawks back now? Just, you know, 10-1, it's over, right? Might as well give them the crown.
They scored more goals opening night than they did that entire series against the Preds.
By a mile.
Yeah, I mean, they
scored more in the first period than they scored against the Preds.
And look, there's reason to really be excited if you're a Hawks fan. Nick Schmaltz, they moved him a year ago. He's a wing. Now he's playing center in between Hartman and Patrick Kane. How'd you like to be a young player in the NHL and said, oh, by the way, you're going to be centering Patrick Kane?
Not bad.
Yeah, now it's Quenneville, so they could change lines at, you know, 7:37 tonight. But they look pretty good. And let's not forget Sharpie. Patrick Sharp lit the lamp in his first game back with the Hawk.
You know, talking to Patrick Sharp when we had him on at the convention and just, you know, paying attention to what's going on around training camp, and Patrick Sharp, he seems super motivated to have a bounce-back year and contribute in any way, shape, or form, whatever they need out of Patrick Sharp.
Yeah, and you got Anisimov and Sharp on a third line? That tells you something about how much talent you have, how much offensive firepower you have. And for all the talk that they're going to split Seabrook and Keith up, game starts, there's 2, and there's 7.
But it's all about 19, man, I think.
Well, he had a rough playoffs, and he took responsibility, and he said he worked his butt off.
I mean, I don't think they make the Saad trade. Now, granted, there was huge financial considerations. They're locking him in and how much money Panarin was going to get, and maybe they didn't feel he was worth it, even though he had a phenomenal season last year. But I still don't, at least I'm not convinced that they would have made the deal had Jonathan Toews not had a regression last season, maybe even last two seasons. So very early, right? That's only one game. That would be early in the season. There's a reason why I'm a professional.
Are you saying small sample size?
That would be a small sample size. But
wouldn't that be a horrible nickname to have?
I mean, I guarantee you right now, Toews is feeling great having Saad here, and you know we'll see where it goes. But that line could be I would think would be an enormous asset /force/ dominator for the Hawks all season long. That's how I'm looking at it, Harry Tynowitz.
And that's how you should look at it. And, you know, they said, well, you know, Kane's going to have to sacrifice. His line won't be as good. The guys he plays with won't be as good. Well, but Kane, 5 points, right? Yeah. opening night.
That's plus a little backhand action, too.
Oh, I love the backhand action. So, yeah, the Hawks look fiery coming, and they didn't beat like a bad team. They beat the defending Stanley Cup champion.
The two-time.
Yeah, and by the way, the Vegas Golden Knights, your uniform looks too much like the Penguins. What the hell are you doing? Your home uniform looks too much like the Ducks, and your road uniform looks too much like the Penguins. You could have done anything. You blew the name. It should have been a better tie-in to Vegas, and you blew the uniform. And, you know, you should have had, like, the Welcome to Vegas sign for your logo. Come on, Vegas, or a pair of dice.
Well, we're going to talk some NFL coming up at 6, and you got teams relocating, like the Chargers out of San Diego to L.A., mm-hmm. and, like, the Rams showing up in L.A. as well. And now you're going to have the Raiders leaving Oakland, going to Las Vegas. As far as relocations go, the NHL just throwing a team in Vegas, go for it.
Genius. It's a genius idea, and there'll be teams there for, you know, maybe not baseball because it's so hot. They'd obviously have to build a stadium with a retractable roof, but there'll be a basketball team in Vegas. I know the Maloofs would like to let it be the Kings, and there'll be a football team there soon with the Raiders. And look, Oakland did not support. I mean, there are diehard fans with the Raiders.
Don't do this. Go ahead. What are you going to say?
San Diego, the taxpayers would not build a new stadium.
Good. They shouldn't. No city should ever do that for a sports team. There's way too many other needs. Pay for your own stadium. You are billionaires. It's your franchise values are
Jerry Jones did it.
It's preposterous that the NFL, and not just the NFL, continues to hijack cities to get stadiums built. I'd let them go, too. See you later. Go up to L.A. and draw no one for a team that doesn't care about you. What does that look like for the league?
That's not great, and I love Philip Rivers, and it's a shame that Philip Rivers has to be involved in that mess. It's just
and Vegas caved, too. Vegas gave the Raiders, what was it, $650 million. And it's all going to be on you and me and your standard taxpayer. That's where it's going to go. It's wrong, man.
Yeah,
flat out wrong.
But what's good for taxpayers is that the soda tax got shot down.
See, I didn't even mind the soda tax.
Well, you're Mr. Health.
Right. Mr. Health.
Mm-hmm.
Last night was
not so healthy?
Well, last night I went to the fireplace and watched the game. Ribs, chicken, had some wings
man,
for an appetizer.
On Wells Street right there?
Yeah, great look. And then today I was out at Ryan Field, had the Sloppy Joe, had some pasta salad.
Oh, whoa, hold on a sec. Hold on a second. Yeah. We don't like the name Sloppy Joe.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
That definitely is a thing. You can. Yeah, that's out. Yeah, Untidy Joseph, by the way.
What it was, excuse me?
Untidy Joseph.
Untidy Joseph.
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you guys worked together before? What's going on here?
Joe and I?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, we were twin brothers from a different mother.
What up?
I mean, I feel like Joe Romano. Dog. Wasn't Joe Romano not on the Harry Tynowitz show?
Joe, no, he wasn't. It wasn't the Harry Tynowitz show. It was Jarrett, Harry, and Spike.
Right, with OC.
Right.
So how come you guys are so tight? I feel out of the loop here.
Because of Jonathan Brandmeier, Showgram.
Oh, I forgot about your Johnny B.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
where it comes from. I was on Brandmeier, too. I wasn't, but I would walk by and I'd see you guys in the whole one studio. You couldn't see, you know, it was all boarded up because you couldn't look at him when he was doing the show.
Plus, Joe and I stayed friends. You know, there's a rule. There's not a rule that you can only be friends with guys on the show that you're on with.
I see. Okay, well, I'm glad. Hey, listen, great to see Joe Romano. Welcome to the beat today, my friend.
Happy to be here.
So let's take a quick time out, and the greatest story of the week is coming up next. It's so good, and it involves McDonald's. 720 WGN. WGN, fantastic text here. We'll explain the cocaine Eric Clapton tune in a second, but I got to read this text, Harry.
Please do.
I've got it. You know, I get the ADD rolling. I see something. I want to read it. Carm, you underestimate the MacGyverness of your audience. Contrary to popular belief, we can listen and chew gum at the same time. I'm watching the Cubs and listening to you. Well, more to Harry than you, but that's on you. Carm, did you pop the question yet? No questions have been popped, sir. Thank you very much for the text, and good choice on who you're listening to.
Here's Carm's question is, how come bull season hasn't started yet?
It's a great question. Hawks text from the 406. How about the man Crawford holding off Crybaby Crosby? No doubt.
Corey Crawford is awesome, and this is it. You know, there's no Scott Darling this year. You're going to need a lot more Corey Crawford between the pipes, and he looks good.
And the 630 texting, and the only bowl Northwestern sees this year is the Toilet Bowl. Let me tell you something, sir. The Wildcats started slow last year. They wound up in the Pinstripe Bowl. They won the Pinstripe Bowl. Do not count out the Cats, sir.
Yeah, first home loss, they're going to win.
They just play the number 4 team in the country and the number 9 team in the country.
And then the probable Heisman Trophy winner.
So just everybody relax. Now, they're not going to be the Big Ten champions, but that's okay. All right, best story of the week. Harry, you brought this to the show's attention. So here we go. Some customers at one McDonald's in New York, which, by the way, okay, I won't even say that because I did go to McDonald's the other day. But it's like, you're in New York. Why would you ever go to McDonald's? There's a million restaurants. Don't go to McDonald's. But I went to McDonald's the other day, so it doesn't hold up.
Did you ever see The Office where Steve Carell goes to New York and he goes, I love...
Never go to Subway in New York. I will stick by that.
Steve Carell goes, I love New York. I love getting a slice of New York-style pizza. He runs into the Sbarro.
Any rate, New York, Dateline, McDonald's. A night shift manager at a Bronx area McDonald's was arrested by police as part of a sting dubbed Operation Off the Menu for allegedly selling thousands of dollars worth of cocaine and crack to undercover officers at the fast food restaurant. So you'd come in, you'd get your number two, a little Dude 2 cheeseburger with a orange, which isn't available anymore at McDonald's, which is very unfortunate. Now I got to go with the Coke. Do you know that? The orange is gone?
Yeah, I'm very upset by that because I am not a pop drinker. I don't like carbonation. And beer is one thing, but you always had the ability to get an orange high C at McDonald's. You could still do it at Burger King.
Well, that's a win for Burger King. But the orange high C at McDonald's is better than the orange at Burger King, in my opinion.
Even though they're both orange high C?
Yes. It matters. I don't know how it matters. It's the way they carbonate their stuff. The Coke at McDonald's is better than the Coke at Burger King.
Hold on. Well, the Coke at this McDonald's is a little different.
Yes. Does Burger King even have Coke or do they have Pepsi? Whatever. I'd rather have a Coke at McDonald's than any other fast food place. For some reason, it tastes better there. That's just me. Maybe I'm nuts, but I guarantee you I could. Back me up, text line 312-981-7200. But
who else thinks the orange high C at McDonald's was better than the orange high C at Burger King?
The undercover sting was conducted by the New York Police Department. The manager, Frank Guerrero, not related to
Pedro,
former Dodger Pedro Guerrero, was at least creative in his deliveries, according to police. Guerrero, who had worked as a night shift manager for 8 years, allegedly sold police cocaine in 8 separate transactions on 2 occasions. Guerrero placed the drugs in a McDonald's cookie bag that was then put inside the larger order of burger and fries. He also allegedly hid cocaine in a soap dispenser in the Mickey D's bathroom.
Yeah, you go through the drive-thru, you know.
Let me get number two. And let me get a hot fudge sundae with extra, extra hot fudge. Ooh, he wants the extra, extra. Now I know what he wants.
Pick two. I'll have the filet of fish and an 8-ball.
So, Harry, cocaine and Mickey D's. Surprised?
Yeah, I'm surprised. And like,
an American institution, man.
Also, 8 times he sold to an undercover cop, knowing what the penalty is for cocaine distribution. How are you just selling cocaine to, you know,
randos at McDonald's?
Yeah. What the hell?
Well, again, Frank Guerrero had a life plan and it just went sideways. Guerrero was, listen, I sort of get it. This is wrong and I shouldn't be on the radio with what I'm about to say. But look, a lot of people take the easy way out, man. You're working at Mickey D's, you're busting it, and you ain't getting rich. So, who knows what his situation was, and he needed some extra dough, and so he made a very poor decision. I don't think it makes him the worst person in the world. Now, if he's selling it to 16-year-olds, that's a different story.
I like to look at all sides of the story. Can you imagine, like, what if you were like a couple of guys that were out looking for Coke that night? You couldn't find any, but you were in McDonald's going, oh man, who do we know we get Coke from?
Guerrero pops up.
The whole time it was right there. It was right there, right where you got your McNuggets.
Well, maybe he had like a, you know, A lot of times, I don't know why I know this, but you know, if you go to a foreign country, perhaps, and you're, you know, walking around the beach, you know, there's always people that are offering.
Right? I know in Mexico, I heard the term mas mota a lot.
Right. The old mota. Manny Motas. So.
Nice reference.
Maybe that's how he went about his business. Maybe Guerrero would start to just try to, like, figure out who could be a potential client. And that's how he built the Guerrero empire, a la Scarface, Al Pacino.
Yeah, but I mean, it's one thing if you say, hey, you know, my buddy told me that you might be able to help me get Cubs tickets. It's another thing if you walk in there and go, hey, my buddy told me I could buy Coke from you.
That's aggressive, yeah.
You know, what are you doing?
I think you get the text. You get a text thing coming in, then you say when you're going, and you're going to order the filet of fish, and you'll be wearing a green shirt, and then Guerrero just steps in there and with the delivery. You know, he had to have people underneath him, right? He couldn't just be a solo Guerrero. People, the cashiers had to know too, right? Or is it all? Maybe it was all through the drive-thru.
I don't think you have to incriminate anybody else. I think, you know, it was one guy, and these cops were going in the store, although it was also available through the drive-thru. You know, McDonald's, I'm seeing the advertising now, they deliver. You know, my kid's all excited.
Uber Eats, Mickey D's?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, therefore, you could have theoretically ordered cocaine to your house.
Number one order at McDonald's for you, Harry?
Right. The Uber would not know it. At McDonald's?
Yeah.
Well, I would say that my favorite thing to get at McDonald's is probably the, would be like a breakfast selection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a big fan of the breakfast options at Mickey D's. I go Filet-O-Fish and orange drink like once every 18 months.
Joe Romano, Mickey D's, your order, please.
Big Mac.
Such a good order.
Yeah, I mean, underrated. If you're not going to go there.
You're not getting that anywhere else.
Yeah.
Something's happened in my house now. It used to be when my kids would get McNuggets, there would always be like six left over.
I want a Big Mac right now.
And now there's 16 and 12, so like there's no more leftover McNuggets.
So be like, how could you go willingly, like in our particular position, we're at, you know, down on Michigan Avenue. I walk out the door, Shake Shack's right there.
Wait, what do you mean it's right there?
It's... You know where Shake Shack is.
No, I don't. There used to be a McDonald's like,
so
behind the
altar. Is that the one on Ohio?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that one. Yeah, that's not right there.
It's right there.
It's a little stroll. There used to be a McDonald's, but it's gone.
Yeah, thank you, Dave Jennings. It's a long walk for a Jew.
Very awkward statement. On that note, the man laughing will have your news in 2 minutes. 720 WGN. 720 WGN, my favorite time of the year, is almost here, although the preseason is underway. Huge win over the Milwaukee Bucks.
So your favorite time of the year isn't Cubs winning playoff games?
That's true, too. Yeah. But I like my basketball along with my baseball.
Blackhawks getting 10 goals opening night?
That was nice. That was great.
Mitch Trubisky?
Mitchell is his name.
Okay.
Mitchell Trubisky. Sure. But Sam Smith, Bulls.com. Of course, the author of The Jordan Rules, and now actually has a new book out as well, Hard Labor, which is the battle that birthed the billion-dollar NBA. Sam, we'll get to that in a second. But
great book, by the way.
Am I wrong that the Bulls are trying to lose as many games as possible this year? Nothing wrong with that, but that is the strategy, correct?
Well, they don't really have to try to lose that many. They're going to. But, you know, that's sort of the evolutionary process of what's going on. You know, they moved on from Jimmy Butler after having moved on from Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and Luol Deng and Kirk Heinrich. So this group that was in place, you know, for a decade, basically almost, since 2008 when Derrick was drafted, you know, it didn't win anything because of injuries and bad luck or whatever. And so, you know, you start again. And when you start again, you know, you start with, you know, with players who are either inexperienced or unable on a certain level. And, you know, so as a result, they're going to lose a lot of games. The players are not going to try to lose games, and the coach is certainly not going to try to lose games, and quite the contrary. And, you know, management is putting in place young players. You know, Chris, all the guys they got from, you know, the Jimmy Butler trade who, you know, potentially look like good players. But, you know, one of them, Levine, who's probably the best, they wouldn't have gotten him unless he was injured. You know, so he has to recover, which seems like he will. And, you know, Chris Dunn, who actually looked really good last night till he got hurt. But, you know, he'll be back in a couple of weeks, and Markkanen's just going to start playing on Sunday. So, you know, it's sort of a tryout, just like, you know, I was writing the other day, it's sort of like Chorus Line. You know, they're all up on stage auditioning, and you know, they're going to weed out the ones who, you know, they can go forward with yet, but it's still not a show.
What a great score, Chorus Line. One was the big hit. So many great songs, Sam.
Mr. Broadway. I know.
Hey,
I can break into a little West Side Story if you'd like.
Oh, I love the Jets and the Sharks. I love that. It's always a good hockey game. Yeah. Sam, you're talking about where everybody's starting. Let's start with this. Please tell us, and the Bulls fans, what is the new Fred Hoiberg offense?
Well, that's sort of overplayed. You know, this notion when it came, well, there's going to be some special offer. Your offense, what you do for the most part, is based on who you have. And so they said, well, you know, Fred's going to come in and he's going to have, you know, everybody sort of copies Golden State now. It's like, you know, whatever works, everybody sort of says, well, that's what we're going to do. You know, in the 80s, it was Magic with a big point guard, and everyone said, oh, yeah, we got to get a big point guard because you need a big point guard. But there's only one Magic Johnson, and, you know, there's only one Warriors. You're not going to be able to do that. And so you go with what you had. When Fred was hired, what he had was a team of mid-range shooters who played a deliberate isolation game. So that's what he had to do, whatever he talked about. So now, you know, Wade, Butler, whatever, you know, Noah, Gasol are gone. You know, those players who played that way. And so now, you know, he would like to play like the rest of the NBA likes to play. I'm not always a big proponent of that myself. Yes, three-pointers are worth more than two. I understand that. But three-pointers that don't go in are not worth more than two. And so I prefer sort of a mix of a game. But, you know, the notion is this, what has become almost a cliche, you know, pace and space. It all comes down to just basketball. But basically, you know, with the players he has now, what they're going to try to do is push the ball, you know, play with more speed, which the whole league is sort of doing. In fact, I was talking with some friends of mine who are referees, and they were saying, you know, how much better shape they've got in now because the game is really quicker than it was 10 years ago. And you see it, you know, with the game pushing the ball and then swinging it out to the corners, which is sort of stupid in a lot of cases because even last night, they had one, you know, one case where they got the ball underneath and they could have had a layup or a dunk. Felicio was standing right under the basket, but they're still thinking about threes that he fired out, you know, when he was by himself. And you see that a lot of times. So in the finals last year, a couple of times with Pachulia, that he was right open for dunks or layups, and he threw it into the corner. Now, they make a lot more of those than most teams, and the Bulls made a lot yesterday. But that's a tough way to win. But, you know, to say they're just going to try to play this way, they don't have players of the level of talent yet. We don't know. You know, a lot of them are new. So because they've sort of tried to groom their team a little bit toward that, Markkanen was just going to come back as a shooter. And they've got more shooting now, finally. And so they can try to play that way. But like we say, you also got to make those shots. And it's a little different in the regular season when they start defending you compared to the preseason.
Sam Smith, Bulls.com with us here, 720 WGN. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Harry Tynowitz. Everybody wants to know who's in charge, Sam, and it seems like there's been a shift and Pax is taking more control and Gar's a little bit more in the background and Doug Collins, of course, is here now too. As far as the Fred decision, which is going to have to be made not tomorrow but at some point coming down the line here, I mean, is this Pax's decision? Because that was clearly Gar's guy.
I don't think. I mean, all the same people are there, and they're going to be there. I think what happened a couple of years ago, you know, John took over from, you know, to go back to basically the way it happened. John took over from Krause to be the general manager with what was then the third rebuilding in 4 years, and so his kind of worked, you know, as good as it could. Heinrich and Ben Gordon and Luol Deng and Nocioni. And so he got a competitive team that won, you know, 49. But they were sort of stuck there. And then they, you know, lucked into Derek and were able to take that jump. But then, you know, around that time, you know, John sort of, I don't know, burned out a little bit on dealing with not the job, but the agents and the media. And so he wanted to step back a little bit from those roles. So, you know, Gar got sort of promoted into those roles, even though John was still there kind of as the decision maker. But Gar took a more forward position because he was dealing with the media and it looked like, you know, he was the decision maker. But it still essentially was the same situation. And now I think John has stepped back more into UC doing more media stuff, and he's on the radio a lot, and he's doing a lot of these press conferences. So he's sort of pushed himself back forward, but took a more public role, so it made it to look on the surface like, you know, now that there was some changes, but there really hasn't been any major changes. He has essentially been in that position, even though he wanted to sort of take a more anonymous position for a couple of years. And, you know, now with the changes, I think he felt, look, if I'm here and I'm doing this, I got to take the responsibility too. So if you got any issues, point to me. So I think that's sort of, you know, sort of what's occurred. But and yeah, you know, so when it comes down to the major decisions, you know, John is going to be the principal recommender, but it's still, you know, the Reinsdorfs are in, you know, Michael Reinsdorf more so now with the Bulls, you know, are in, and you know, just like all those previous decisions are, you know, going to be made in consultation with that whole group.
Sam, we know there's three guys that are coming over here for the Butler trade, but the guy who I still maintain will have a major presence on the Bulls, a lot of basketball people keep poo-pooing Denzel Valentine. Now, he was National College Player of the Year, as we all know. Last night, he reminded me of a young Mark Carmen draining his first five threes. What do you foresee is the future for Denzel Valentine?
I'd be one of those people, Sam, who would say that Denzel Valentine cannot play. But go ahead.
Well, it's somewhere between, and that's where, you know, things should be, you know, a nice compromise between the two of you. You know, somewhere between he can play in the NBA and he's not probably not a starting level player in the NBA. And, you know, because his speed, he just doesn't, he's a, you know,
slow.
He has the feel for the game, and he's a smart player. You know, he knows, you know, where the game is going when he's on the floor, where guys are, where the right pass to make. And his shot's better, actually, because he's taken some arc out of it. I always thought he shot it too high. And I thought he's improved his shot a little bit. And, you know, anytime you can shoot, especially now in the NBA. But he just doesn't have enough athletic ability, speed combination that he's going to be taking advantage of some on defense. And so I see him as a nice role player. I see him as a legitimate NBA player, but not, you know, to me, with the Bulls now, to me, the best player is going to be LaVine. And he's got the athletic ability, the shooting. He's got all the elements to potentially be a star player. And obviously, you know, coming off an ACL, especially after Derek, we all worry about that. But, you know, guys have come back from, there's been a lot of guys who've had those injuries and come back. You know, Jamal Crawford had that his second year with the Bulls and, you know, has got like a 17-year career or something and is very athletic. So, you know, there's no reason to think LaVine won't be. I still don't know exactly which way he pronounces his name based on his spelling. I know he doesn't look Jewish, Harry.
You call him Zach. It, by the way, Jamal Crawford's going to win a title this year in Minnesota alongside Tom Thibodeau and Jimmy Butler, which, by the way, Sam, and I know we don't undo these things, and in my mind it was time for the Bulls to get on with it and get into the rebuild, but would you have done the Butler deal?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, it always looks like offense to Jimmy. No offense to Jimmy. You know, I mean, he got them three potentially, you know, really good players, a lottery pick, Levine, like I say, who you know could be a star, and I think Dunn has some real possibilities also. And that's a lot, you know. But it was pretty clear last season, and to an extent the season before, the community didn't like this team very much, didn't like the way they played, didn't believe that it could go anywhere, and none of us watching it believed it either. And so when you get to that point, and like I say, I more referred to what occurred over the long term. You know, Jimmy was a part of the group with Derek, with Joe, with, you know, Ding, and then sort of transitioned to Pau Gasol. And it, you know, it couldn't get beyond eight, basically. And it was kind of getting stuck there. And you weren't getting Kevin Durant. You know, LeBron James, the major free agent, has not ever come to Chicago and wasn't going to. And so... How in the space of the next couple of years, which is Jimmy's prime, you know, 5-6 years from now is not going to be, were you going to be able to do this, you know, with Jimmy Butler? So, I think I'm not usually a rebuilding advocate, but I think for this franchise, given the run that they've had, you know, having made the playoffs, whatever. I know not anyone cares, but over the last 10 or 12 years, probably among the top five teams in the league as far as playoff appearances, you were just stuck now. And there was no real legitimate path that was realistic that you were going to be able to get back in contention. You might not be able to now, but this is a path to it. You didn't have a path to it before with Jimmy, because you could only get, you know, this kind of payoff if you traded Jimmy. You couldn't keep Jimmy and get these kind of players with what you had on the roster, because you've been drafting out of the lottery for the last 10 years. And yeah, but people always say, well, they made all these mistakes. They should have picked this guy, that guy. You know what? Go back to the 90s when the Bulls were drafting out of the lottery and see who they picked. See who those 10 guys were. Jerry Krause, who's in the Hall of Fame now and won two Executive of the Year awards.
Mark Randall.
Look at those 10 draft picks, and then tell me how you were going to build a team out of that.
Well, you could make the argument, though, Sam, that you could have had Carmelo because you basically got him to the Thunder. So then you could have had Carmelo, Rondo, Jimmy, Taj you could have brought back. That team is probably fourth seed in the Eastern Conference.
So, well... You couldn't have had Carmelo. How could you have had Carmelo? He could have come here a couple of years ago. He wouldn't, you know, when it clearly could have. He had to drop his no trade to pick a place. He did not want to come to Chicago then.
That would have been a problem. The no trade.
With a better team, so why was he coming now? He had no relationship with Jimmy Butler. You know, they weren't close or anything. No, Carmelo Anthony. Even plus the fact that, You know. Look, he's an older isolation player. Haven't we seen enough of this? I mean, he's just an advanced version of Dwayne Wade. I mean, the attraction Oklahoma City's got is because they've got Russell Westbrook and Paul George, not Carmelo Anthony.
You call
that
him up,
been a disaster.
You call him up, you say Carmelo, Chicago's sweet. We've got the great Harry Tynowitz here.
That's how you're recruiting.
Tremendous at restaurants. New York's the biggest disaster of your life. You should have come here then. Come now. And then you have a roster that's, you know, I think, let's put it this way. If you polled Bulls fans, if you could have that roster or the one that they have now, and by the way, I would pick the one they have now, I'd be interested to see what they would say. That's all.
I don't think there was much interest in Carmelo. Anyone who's watched Carmelo Anthony the last couple of years knows that he's internally disruptive, a cancer of kind of a player.
Right.
He runs out coaches. You know, he ran out Mike D'Antoni because D'Antoni was trying to feature Lynn to help make the team better. He ran out Phil's, no question. You know, Phil has asked. All Phil is ever asking him is drop your no trade so we'll get you where you want to go. But he wanted to run out Phil. So he's a bad guy. He's an internal cancer. He's a ball stopper. He's an older player who doesn't defend and doesn't pass the ball. I don't get the attraction. What would be the attraction?
Why
would you want to watch him play basketball?
There isn't one. But
just wants to meet his wife.
It would have been perfect.
Well, he'd like to, too. He's divorced.
All right. Enough with Carmelo. Right, Harry, go ahead.
So, Sam, before we let you go, you know the NBA like nobody's business. Tell us about the new book.
The new book is the NBA's oldest. I'm really excited about it. You know, you're not supposed to say that when it's your own book. And it's sort of the story of the history of, the reason I wrote the book was to basically maybe, you know, honestly, to try to make the current players feel guilty a little bit and say, these guys who got free agency for you, none of them benefited from it at all. But they fought for it. Some were blackballed. They sued the league. But I really expanded it to be a story of the league from almost the beginning into the mid 70s, and a lot of great stories, and that's you know sort of the fun stuff. I think it's this kind of book where you say, well, I didn't know that. The Lakers plane crash, which was basically Sully on the Hudson. I mean, it was an amazing story with Elgin Baylor on the plane crashing in the Ohio cornfield and everybody surviving. You know, the AFL, you know, the ABA merger, which they tried, and that was the genesis of the suit. But, you know, the AFL got the merger, which was against antitrust because they bribed a congressman. I mean, a senator. Don Kogis, the famous bull, I know you remember. And basically the story about all these things that we see now. You know, Don Kogis was a bull in the expansion team in 66. He eventually invented the lob dunk. And, you know, and Archie Clark was the first guy to do crossover dribble. It wasn't Allen Iverson. This stuff was going on years before. And then Wilt and Russell, how they used to travel together in the summer, play pickup games, you know, all over the country. Twyman's story with Maurice Stokes, who basically was LeBron James in 1954. Incredible guy, player, who would have, had he not gotten paralyzed, literally, from playing and taken care of by Twyman, which was the most amazing teammate story in the history of sports. And then how these guys fought against so much of the racism in the 60s. Lenny Wilkins, who was an all-star at the time, was barred from eating at restaurants in downtown St. Louis, which had his picture in the window because he was an all-star with the St. Louis Hawks. Elgin Baylor, literally sitting out a regular season game that they had played. They used to play a lot of these neutral sites games back then because he couldn't eat with the team at the team restaurant. These guys having to endure so much of that. And, you know, really being civil rights fighters in their own respect. So, it was fun for me, fun to learn about that. And I basically profiled the plaintiffs of the suit. 14 plaintiffs with Oscar Robertson, which included Bill Bradley and Joe Caldwell and Kogis, I mentioned, Milk Hounds, Havlicek, Tom Mascheri, who played for the Warriors and Supersonics and literally was in a Japanese prison of war camp during World War II. So a lot of incredible stories, and I got to spend time with all those guys, Wes Unseld and Chet Walker, the old bull, Dick Van Arsdale. So it's a great fun look at the history of the league and also, you know, current with the civil rights issues they dealt with and also the free agency. So,
well, when Kazu Ishiguro was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature earlier this week, Sam, I was at my job over at FanSide and they asked me, Carm, do you, you know, what's the last book you read? And I said, The Jordan Rules. So,
I heard that's what he said, too.
Yeah, so I just did order on Amazon, Sam Smith, Hard Labor. I kid you not. Harry, you can verify that's on my screen.
Yes, he did order it.
Purchased and done, Sam.
What's that, Kardashian?
You won't regret it.
Guaranteed delivery.
I'm offering a money-back guarantee. Yeah.
Sam, you're the best. Thanks a lot.
All right, guys, thanks.
Sam Smith, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Harry Tynowitz. The Bears are off tomorrow getting ready for the Minnesota Vikings Monday night, the debut of Mitchell Trubisky. Harry, your emotions, please.
I'm very excited. How could you not be? I think this could be the start of one of the five greatest quarterbacks ever to play in the National Football League.
Did you just say that?
Yes.
One of the five greatest?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't want to, it's a little early to tell, right. So he's still in my top 500. But, you know, who knows what we could get with the Mitchell Trubisky. But it's such a smart move to start him. But it's so weird. For the second Sunday in a row, no Bears. It throws me off.
Well, right. And so we'll have to figure out what to do with our lives. Of course, there will be a beat on Sunday afternoon. We'll be hopefully talking about the Cubs being up 2-0. But let's take a look. We'll do more Bears a little bit later. But let's look around the old NFL here and what's going on in the league. First of all, when you look at the Central, or the Central.
The Central.
The old NFC North, thank you very much.
Yes, the Norris Division, Chris Berman.
I mean, as it relates to the Bears and their rebuild, you've got a very good defense in Minnesota that we're going to see tomorrow night. You've got a Lions team that's, you know, playing good football and is 3-1, and you still have Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. But I don't see any powerhouses around the division, at least, where if the Bears actually had their stuff together, you couldn't feel confident about getting to the top fairly quick.
Well, the Lions are about 6 inches away from being undefeated.
That's true.
You know, I mean, they've been pretty fantastic, and Matthew Stafford looks like the guy who deserves to be amongst the highest-paid players. He is the highest-paid player. I think the Green Bay-Dallas game tomorrow is going to be pretty crazy because, as we remember, Dallas was the favorite, and Green Bay went down there to Jerry World, and they spanked him last year. So here comes Aaron Rodgers again, and here comes a Dallas offense that's looking a little slow. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers, second most sacked quarterback in the first 4 weeks of the NFL season. So I'm looking forward to cheering against the Packers like I do every Sunday.
That's always – you're a Green Bay Packer hater here. I see the Bears have not been competitive with Green Bay for so long that I just have sort of lost that whole – Packer hate thing. Like, let me know when that rivalry actually matters again. And to Dallas is a 3-point favorite at home tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And the Cowboys, Dax looked great, and he hasn't looked great all in the same season at this point.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I mean, he's pretty good.
Could have been a bear. You know who
could have been everybody.
You know who also could have been a bear and is playing in a 2-2 team at home tomorrow Sunday night. With Kansas City,
Deshaun Watson.
That would be Deshaun Watson. Now, are you telling me that the Bears got this right with Mitchell Trubisky?
Well, it's definitely the guy that the Bears wanted. Bears traded up to get him. They were worried about not getting him with the number 3 pick. Watson sure looked spectacular last week. You know, what 5 touchdowns? Just ridiculous. But, again, I'm a big Andy Reid guy. And I really, really have always liked the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm hoping the Chiefs can stay undefeated. I think they will. They're going down to Houston. And, you know, my heart goes out to Houston. And I'm cheering for the Astros, because I think, you know, what everybody in Houston had to go through. 27,000 people lost their homes, which has got awful. But I want the Chiefs to knock off the Texans tomorrow, and I think they will. They've got – talk about the Cowboys having no speed. How about all the speed in the Kansas City offense?
I'm picking Houston to win that game. Kansas City –
you're high.
A lot of people think the Chiefs – I guess maybe you think it too – are the best team in the NFL.
Well, they got Kareem Hunt, who's come out of off the campus of Toledo, and he looks like a 1,000-yard rusher. He's lightning-fast running back.
You know what he's averaging per carry, Kareem Hunt? Over seven
ridiculous.
Yards a carry.
You got Tyreek the Freak Hill – who is probably the fastest player, you know, in football. He's a wide receiver who also, you know, gets the ball out of the backfield. You got Travis Kelce, one of the most athletic, fastest tight ends in all of football. And I love it that Alex Smith is finally being called a quarterback and not a game manager.
No, he's a game manager.
He's a quarterback.
No, come on.
What do you want him to do? He's gotten pigeonholed, and it's so grossly unfair.
See, okay, I think this is like a sort of a pigeonhole, Harry Tynowitz felt pigeonholed somewhere in his life situation that you're playing out with Alex Smith.
I mean felt. He's in past tense.
Alex Smith is a game manager. He's a good game manager.
What did he do against New England? Did you not see that game? Was he managing the game?
Yeah, New England might have the worst defense in the NFL. Everyone's putting up points on the Patriots. The Patriots are in an interesting little spot,
except Tampa Bay.
Except Tampa Bay Thursday night, but I don't count Thursday night games. 3 days after Sunday, shouldn't have them. It's against what the NFL says they're about. Of course, they're not necessarily about that. What do you think about the 3-1 Buffalo Bills up top that division there, buddy?
It's weird. I was thinking about how I want anybody but New England to win that division.
Well,
I'm all for Buffalo hasn't won a playoff game since, you know, Jim Kelly 99. Was there. It's so sad, and they have great football fans. I was lucky enough to go to that stadium once when Hollisack was still playing for the Bills. I would love to see Buffalo go out tomorrow and get a victory over the Cincinnati Bengals in Ohio. Bengals, all they've done this year is knock off the Browns. How tough is that? And I think the team that's really fun to watch now are your favorite NFL quarterback, Josh McCown, and the Jets.
2-2 Jets playing at the Browns. One comment on the Bengals, though.
Yeah.
Ken Zampezi, their former offensive coordinator, fired after 2 weeks. I like Cincinnati tomorrow. They're a 3-point favorite at home. Want that on the record here as we – I think we're – are you picking the Bills?
I will cheer for the Bills. Yeah, I'll take the Bills plus the points tomorrow.
Okay. Josh McCown somehow –
your guy.
Well, it is just incredible that when he was here, the people that didn't like McCown never would have thought that still at whatever he is, what, 38 years old now, that he's still a starter in the league, granted on – one of the worst teams in the league, but they do have more wins than the Bears, for the record.
I mean, I didn't dislike Josh McCown. I just thought that Cutler should be starting over him.
Did you see Jay Cutler this past weekend?
Oh, he was awful. How about when 2 weeks ago they played each other, and Josh McCown was the much better quarterback?
That was so great.
Right, and you know, the Jets were, in the history of Vegas, there's never been a team longer odds to win a Super Bowl at the start of the season than the Jets. So the first team to be 1,000-1. 1,000-1 to win the Super Bowl, and I don't even think they're going to finish with more than 5 or 6 wins. But Josh McCown is going to go to Cleveland tomorrow. How's that game of Pickett? Browns should be always an underdog.
I like the Browns.
You're goofy. I like the Jets.
I listen. If you give me a team at home,
mm-hmm.
where they're
what about the Cleveland Browns?
I understand that, listen, I picked the Browns last week. That didn't go particularly well for me. They got annihilated.
You picked them to beat the Bengals?
Yeah. It was one of the, I did. 31-7. Wasn't even remotely in the old.
Well, you were close, when they kicked off.
It was kind of like, I picked Northwestern to beat Penn State today.
That wasn't good.
That was not good.
Why did Clayton Thorson throw that pass on the first drive? What was that?
There were so many today. That one was one thing that you're talking about when they were at. First and goal at the 10.
And they went to third and goal at the 28.
Yeah, they forced
that pass that got picked.
Directly backwards. So, again, it's Bears and Vikings Monday night. Don't forget Hamp and OB with Kaz at 10:30 Monday night after hopefully the Bears get their second win on the season.
Bears.
Minnesota, a 2.5-point favorite. One thing before we go, Sean McVay.
Yeah, he's pretty popular out in Los Angeles.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
The Rams are 3-1. Okay, nice little story.
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to their games, or at least some people are, but not they're not exactly selling out here. And then you've got the Chargers. Literally no one's going.
Yeah, and they're playing in a, 29,000-seat soccer stadium, and they can't fill it? They're blocking out sections of the upper deck.
Right. Let the Chargers go back to San Diego. They never should have left. No one is ever going to turn into a L.A. Charger fan. Los Angeles people don't like the Chargers. They're Raiders fans. The NFL with this whole, and then the Raiders going to Vegas is gross. But the disaster that I was hoping for in L.A. Mm-hmm. is happening, so it makes me moderately happy. I root for disasters, Harry. Is that bad?
I think, yeah, it's kind of bad that you root for disasters because you and Chelsea seem to be getting along so great.
But I'm about loyalty, Harry. I'm about San Diego and the Chargers. I'm about Oakland and the Raiders. I'm about Harry and Danny Tyne was having dinner on a Saturday night before True Blue at 11 o'clock tonight. Please be there for the Cubs post.
Oh, it's a special 1 hour look at where the Cubs are in the playoff race. Andy Mazur at the Carm and myself. Hey, Tweet Harry, we're with you 11 at 12. And listen for all these special Cubs playoff shows during their run to their second consecutive World Series championship.
Let's wrap up our NFL talk with the Panthers at the Lions. We mentioned Detroit a couple of minutes ago, but we haven't talked about Carolina and Cam Newton going at a female reporter this week. Not necessarily even going at, but making just a moronic comment of which he's apologized for because she was...
Finally apologized. It took him a while to apologize.
Yeah, it did. And she was asking detailed questions about, well, when you're running this route and whatnot, and he just started chuckling, if you missed it, and said, I think it's funny when, you know, a woman asks about routes, which could have, now if he had directed that, if he had just said reporter,
yeah,
and dogged the entire media, like, hey, you all think you know football, I know.
Like Jay Cutler did every question.
Right. That would have been better, but that's not what he did. And then it came out that she's got some tweets that she had to apologize for, which were racist.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing's ugly. And I don't exactly even know what my point is in bringing this up, other than the fact that that was a story this week in the NFL.
Well, Cam Newton has had a bad year. He hasn't been good, and he finally played very well last week, but he needs to be a lot better if Carolina wants to win. And I look for Christian McCaffrey to have a big day tomorrow.
He got a huge pass, Cam Newton did, when the Panthers lost in the Super Bowl, and he acted like a petulant kid.
Yeah, he wouldn't come out.
Wouldn't come out, didn't talk to the media, sat there with his hood on, and just was acted like the world had come to an end. I'm just not in the business of giving athletes passes when they act. In the moment, if you get I'm not there. You have time to cool off, presenting yourself to the media. You're talking to the fans. It's one of the reasons why you're as rich as you are. It's not a lot to ask.
The greatest football player in the history of the NFL did the same thing when his team won the Super Bowl.
Greatest football player in the history of the – oh, Walter didn't talk that day?
Right. And here's the reason why. Because what made Walter Payton great, as talented as he was.
That's one day in the career of Walter Payton.
It's one moment.
Right.
But as talented as Walter Payton was, and that was, he had God-given talent, but he also worked his ass off. He ran that hill, and then he ran some more, and he made his son run that hill, and his son is like, but Dad, I want to play soccer and, you know, eat Cheetos. And he goes, no, you run the hill. Walter was so passionate that, you know, he didn't get in the end zone. He just didn't feel like coming out. Cam Newton was just dumb. It was a stupid thing to say by Cam Newton.
Yeah, it really was, and we'll all forget about it by tomorrow probably. All right, move.
Yes, 10 o'clock tonight. I'm sorry, 11 o'clock tonight after the Hawks win. Andy Mazur at the Carm and myself, True Blue.
Blackhawks hockey coming up. Don't forget True Blue, the Cubs postgame show at 11. Thanks to Harry. You're the man, 720 WGN.